Okay, I mean, this is going to be a bit of a trip down memory lane, because in the 1970s and 1980s, when Trotskyism was all the rage, you know, party members had to know about the Russian Revolution, what happened, you know, who was Kerensky, who was what was Kronstadt, all this sort of thing. Of course, it's not so important today. But anyway, what I want to talk about is, as I said just now, was Lenin a Russian anti-Tsarist revolutionary who got it right, or was he a revolutionary socialist who got it wrong? I mean, Lenin is notorious, at least amongst socialists, for his theory of the vanguard party of professional revolutionaries, which he set out in 1902 in a pamphlet called What Is to Be Done. But I'm not entirely sure that this can count as a mistake. After all, it worked, and it did allow the Bolsheviks to seize and retain political power. And some interference. And it wasn't a theory of organization that Lenin himself had devised. I mean, he inherited it from previous generations of Russian and anti-Tsarist revolutionaries. So I don't know what this interference is. Is it me, is it? Anyway, I mean, the reason why I don't think it's right, as I say, to call this a mistake, but it is from a socialist point of view, of course it is. I mean, it was to think that an organizational form that could and should be used to further the cause of socialism, but this, you know, the revolutionary party of professional revolutionaries could be this. I mean, it could be and was used to seize political power and to completely uproot the Tsarist social and political regime. But uprooting Tsarism was not the same as overthrowing capitalism. I mean, this theory of the vanguard party wasn't an organizational form that could be used to end capitalism. So as far as the Bolsheviks, or the Bolshevik regime, set out to do this, it was a failure. And the revolution led by a vanguard party cannot lead to socialism, which requires the democratic participation of the majority of the working class. But it can only lead to the rule of a vanguard party, which, if this rule survives, is likely to evolve into a new ruling class on the basis of capitalism. But anyway, as I said, was Bolshevism really an attempt to establish socialism, or historically a movement to overthrow Tsarism? I mean, of course, its leaders claim to be committed socialists, and they may well have thought that their actions were paving the way for socialism. But as Marx pointed out when he first publicly expounded the outlines of his theory of history in 1859, just as you cannot judge somebody by what they say about themselves, you can't judge a period of revolution transformation by what those carrying it out say they're doing. But this is a quote from Marx: consciousness must be explained from the contradiction of material life, from the conflict existing between the social forces of production and the relations of production. So what were the conditions of material life and the contradiction between the forces of production and the relations of production in Russia that led to the rise of the Russian anti-Tsarist revolutionary movement and to its ultimate success in and after 1917. In mid 19th century Russia, there was no constitution. The Tsar was the sole ruler. The Russian scene had certain feudal aspects, notably the division of society into legal estates. There were the nobles, clergy, merchants, serfs. On the other hand, it had features of what's been called Oriental despotism. I mean, the Tsar was the sole he was the sole ruler. He was the father of the people, and the bureaucrats who staffed the state machine, from ministers downwards, were his servants. In fact, a vast and centralized bureaucratic machine had been at the disposal of the Tsars since the time of Peter the Great, who was the Tsar from 1689 to 1725. I mean, this Tsar had pursued a policy of modernization, that is, of taking what was useful from Western Europe to bolster up the autocracy. I mean, a standing army, a regular system of taxation, and a civil service open to all were established. I mean, this latter led to the creation of a new estate in the official hierarchy, the state officials. And when in later times the autocratic state interested itself in education, health, and other technical matters, to these were added a group of people officially designated as the intelligentsia of diverse ranks. These were professional people of non-noble origin working for the central or local government. And these, together with writers, journalists, and impoverished nobles and sons of the lesser clergy, provided the basis of that peculiar but important group, the Russian revolutionary intelligentsia. Now, intelligentsia is now part of most languages. I mean, it's a Russian word. In developed capitalist countries, most of the sort of people that the word referred to in 19th century Russia would be members of the working class. But in mid-19th century Russia, there was as yet no working class. But even so, the intelligentsia was a distinct social group of its own. At this time, Russia was a powerful absolutist state and was regarded as the main threat to liberty by European liberals and also, rather obsessively, by Marx. But Russia was affected by the events that had taken place and were taking place in the rest of Europe. I mean, the philosophers of the French Enlightenment, read by educated Russians, and the French Revolution had a deep effect on them. I mean, even in the 18th century, people had called for an end to the autocracy, and for the liberation of the serfs. I mean, the first action took place in December 1825, when a group of revolutionaries, which were officers from the noble class, tried to seize power. The plotters came to be known as the Decembrists and can be said to be the beginning of the Russian revolutionary tradition. The secret revolutionary groups continued to exist for the next three decades. In the 1850s, one of these revolutionaries, Nikolai Ogarev, who died in 1877, put forward a plan for a revolutionary organization and for the strategy that it should pursue. I mean, a particular relevance for tracing the origins of Bolshevism is a theory of how a revolutionary group should be organized. I mean, it should, he said, be a secret society under the control of a self-appointed and full-time center, which would give all the orders. In other words, the struggle to overthrow Tsarism should be led by professional revolutionaries. An organization called Land and Liberty was formed in 1861 and 1862 on these lines by people around Nikolai Chernyshevsky, the author of a novel which bore the title of What is to be Done? Now, the Russian revolutionary movement had a socialist, in inverted commas, tinge from the start, and the slogans of bourgeois liberalism had no attraction for it. Its participants were known as Narodniks or populists. I mean, not in its current sense of demagogues, but of political activists who were for the people. I mean, the Second Land and Liberty, formed in 1876, split into two. Now, one part, the People's Will under Peter Chakov, organized as a body of professional revolutionaries aiming at a coup and using terror, which is assassinations, as a weapon. The assassination of the Tsar in 1881 led to the breakup of the revolutionary groups by the police. As a result, there was a turning away in the Narodnik circles from secret societies and professional revolutionaries. But the Ogarev Chakov theory of organization still survives. Up till then, the Tsarist government had been pursuing a liberal policy. The serfs were nominally freed in 1861. Local government and the judiciary were reorganized, but the policy that was to have the most significant effect was industrialization. I mean, the state played an important part in this, together with foreign capital. And capitalism, if you like, was another of those useful devices introduced after the manner of Peter the Great to increase the power of the autocracy. Actually, of course, it undermined it. It led to the creation of a new class for Russia, the propertyless wage worker. And the revolutionary intelligentsia began to turn their attention from the peasantry to this new working class as a mass basis for their anti-Tsarist movement. I mean, many of them became social democrats and Marxists. So capitalism was introduced into Russia from above by the Tsarist state working with Russian and foreign bankers. I mean, modern large-scale industry was imported and was not the result, as in the rest of Europe, of a process of evolution from petty industry, as traced by Marx in Capital. I mean, this meant that Russian industry was highly concentrated. In fact, in 1913, there was a higher proportion of large-scale enterprises in Russian industry than anywhere else in Europe. The social and political results of this concentration were the dependence of the capitalist class on Tsarism and foreign capital and its extreme isolation from the working class. I mean, in Western Europe, I mean, the capitalists for a long period drew behind them the working class. I mean, this was the case in Britain with the liberals and in France with the radicals right up until the First World War. This was not to be repeated in Russia. When the first real showdown with Tsarism came in 1905, the workers turned not to their employers, but to the revolutionary intelligentsia for leadership. So this isolation and weakness of the Russian capitalist class and its consequent inability to lead a mass popular movement against Tsarism had an important consequence. It meant that the traditional bourgeoisie's task of clearing away the relics of feudalism had to be carried out in Russia by another group, precisely the intelligentsia. So on this interpretation, Bolshevism in theory and practice would be a revolutionary movement arising out of the peculiar social and historical conditions of Tsarist Russia. In the absence of a strong and independent capitalist class, the task of leading the popular struggle against absolutism fell to this other group, let's say the intelligentsia. Now, it's not without significance, but Lenin was a member of this group, with his father being a fairly high-ranking Tsarist state official. I think he was technically a noble. Nor is it irrelevant that his elder brother had been executed in 1887 at the age of 21 for being part of a plot to assassinate the Tsar, or that he chose the title of a series of articles in which he expounded his theory of the vanguard party to be, you know, what is to be done, as I've already mentioned, which was a novel by a well-known Russian revolutionary who also favoured Russian revolutionaries organising as a vanguard party. And this was why I was a bit hesitant about saying that Lenin's advocacy of a vanguard party was a miscalculation. I mean, this would be to attribute the form that the Russian political and social revolution against Tsarism took to a mistaken theory of organisation. I mean, whereas the theory wasn't mistaken, it was in fact the product of material conditions of the time and what was required to resolve the contradiction within them. In this case, Lenin was not the cause of what happened, but he was, as it were, a personification, an instrument of what was required to be done to resolve the social contradiction between the developing capitalism and the political and social structure that placed fetters on this. Only a well-organized, disciplined vanguard party, such as the Bolsheviks were, could have cleared the way so thoroughly for the unfettered development of capitalism in Russia after 1917 by ruthlessly uprooting the Tsarist social and political order. In recent decades, there's been a move to, as it were, rehabilitate Lenin and present him as a left-wing social democrat operating in the context of an absolutist state. And I think that a case can be made out for this. I mean, in the period up until the First World War and up in fact to 1917, the immediate aim of the Bolsheviks was neither socialism nor a one-party dictatorship, but a democratic republic, a complete as possible bourgeois democracy, if you like. Within, you know, the overthrow of the Tsar, election of a constituent assembly that would draw up a democratic constitution and result in some sort of left-wing people's government that would allow the further development of capitalism with various safeguards for the working class. I mean, this was more or less the aim of all the Russian revolutionary groups, and could in fact be said to have been the best that could have been expected, short of a world socialist revolution, in the material conditions that existed in Russia. As I say, personally, I'm prepared to concede that Lenin was a socialist and a Marxist, that he did want to see established a society of common ownership, democratic control, production directly for use, and distribution according to need, at least eventually. and he did understand what Marx was getting at, as could be seen from an entry he wrote for a Swiss encyclopedia in 1914, as well as from his book on the development of capitalism in Russia that he wrote in 1899. Tsarist political rule was not, in fact, ended by an insurrection led by a vanguard party of professional revolutionaries, but collapsed of its own accord in March 1917 under the strain of a prolonged war, and this left leaving a power vacuum. I mean, in the end, after 6 or so months of political chaos, the Bolsheviks proved to be the only group capable of seizing and holding political power due to being precisely a disciplined party of professional revolutionaries, but also by capturing the mood of the population with their slogan of peace, land, and bread. And when they got power, I mean, they did, and this is to their credit, they did try to end the war on the Eastern Front, and they did endorse the peasants' seizure and breakup of the estates of the Tsarist nobility. And they maintained themselves in power, and they completely uprooted the Tsarist social order. They killed all the members of the royal family, and they deprived the Orthodox Church of all its powers. In short, they removed all the obstacles that had stood in the way of capitalist development in Russia. And this is where I think some of Lenin's miscalculators, if you like, as a socialist, come in. I mean, the first of these was his belief that a socialist revolution was possible in Russia in 1917. When he returned to Russia in April 1917, Lenin gave a speech in which he announced that the aim of the Russian Revolution was no longer a bourgeois democratic republic, but a workers' socialist government. Even some members of the Bolshevik Party, let alone those in other groups that considered themselves Marxists, were surprised, pointing out that the material conditions were not ripe for socialism. Lenin's reply was ingenious but dishonest. "I agree," he said, "that Russia isn't ripe for communism, Marx's higher phase of communist society, but that's not what I'm proposing. It's just socialism, Marx's first phase of communist society." I mean, this is what he wrote. "In fact, when a learned professor talks of wild utopias, of the demagogic promises of the Bolsheviks, of the impossibility of introducing socialism, it is the higher stage or phase of communism he has in mind, which no one has ever promised or even thought to introduce, because, generally speaking, it cannot be introduced." And this brings us to the question of the scientific distinction between socialism and communism. What is usually called communism was termed by Marx the first or lower phase of communist society. Not till then, nobody had made this distinction between communism and socialism. But when Lenin went on to write that, under what he meant by socialism, this is another quote, "all citizens are transformed into hired employees of the state, which consists of the armed workers. All citizens become employees and workers of a single countrywide state syndicate." It's clear he was talking about state capitalism, and capitalism, of course, because the workers would remain wage workers. Now, after the Bolshevik seizure of power in November 1917, this confusion between socialism and state capitalism continued. I mean, you know, once in power, the Bolsheviks faced the immediate problem of trying to keep production going, just to stop society from falling apart. But here, Lenin advocated something along the lines of the German war economy, which he openly described as state capitalism, adding that it's the very last stage before what he meant by socialism. What happened in practice was that Russia, faced with foreign invasion and a civil war, the state had to take over the direct production and distribution of goods and services, taking food from the peasants and rationing it out to the urban population. At the time, this was called war communism, but a more accurate description would be an emergency statist economy or something like that. But it was clear it couldn't continue indefinitely. Now, when towards the end of 1920 the civil war had been won by the Bolsheviks and the situation stabilized, the Bolshevik government under Lenin was forced to recognize that allowing capitalism to develop was the only way forward. Despite opposition from left-wing Bolsheviks who saw this as a retreat, a new economic policy was adopted, allowing peasants to make a profit from selling their products. In a thesis drafted for the Congress of the Communist International in July 1921, Lenin wrote, freedom to trade means freedom for capitalism. It also means a new form of capitalism. It means that to a certain extent, we are recreating capitalism. We're doing this quite openly. It is state capitalism. The development of capitalism, controlled and regulated by the proletarian state, is advantageous and necessary in an extremely devastated and backward small peasant country. Now, justifying this policy before the Fourth Congress of the Communist International in November 1922, Lenin said that the Bolshevik government had to admit that the direct transition to purely socialist forms, to purely socialist distribution, was beyond our available strength, and if we were unable to effect retreat so as to confine ourselves to easier tasks, we would face a disaster. I mean, a frank admission, if ever there was, that Russia was not ripe for socialism, but only for capitalism. Incidentally, this was a dangerous thing to have said in Russia in 1922, as Lenin said that those who did should face a firing squad. This is the quote from the speech he gave at the time. There's an Austrian social democrat called Otto Bauer. He said, they're now retreating to capitalism. We've always said that it was a bourgeois a revolution. And he said, he goes on to say, you know, the Mensheviks and social revolutionaries and other non-Bolshevik Russian revolutionaries, they say, the revolution has gone too far. What are you saying now? We've been saying all the time, permit us to say it again. But we say in reply, permit us to put you before a firing squad for saying that. Either you refrain from expressing your views, or if you insist on expressing your political views publicly in the present circumstances, well, we'll treat you as the most worst pernicious white guy element. In other words, if you pointed out that they were retreating to capitalism, you'd be put before a firing squad. I mean, I don't think Lenin was a very nice person, incidentally. Even when he didn't have power, he was very acerbic against his opponents. But when he did get power, he was able to shoot them. Anyway, to return to the main subject, the only socialist element in this policy was political, that the state was proletarian because the Bolshevik Party that controlled it was the vanguard of the working class. Well, actually, of course, it was the vanguard of the revolutionary intelligentsia. In other words, it was socialist only insofar as the government called itself socialist, which wasn't true. I mean, this also applies, of course, to Lenin's description of the seizure of power by the Bolsheviks in November 1917 as a socialist revolution. I mean, those who carried it out certainly call themselves socialists, but that's not enough to make the anti-Tsarist revolution that they carried out socialist. I mean, a socialist revolution surely has to be a revolution that abolishes capitalism and brings in socialism, not the installation of a government that has to encourage the development of capitalism, albeit under its control and regulation. Now, the other justification that Lenin gave, having seized political control in Russia, was that Russia was the weakest link in a chain of imperialist countries, which meant that it had been easier to overthrow. It was easier to overthrow capitalist rule there. Basically, what he was saying was that the First World War was going to be followed by a world socialist revolution, and that it had first broken out in Russia. I mean, there was not much evidence that the Russian Revolution was going to be followed by similar revolutions in the advanced capitalist countries of the world. I mean, elections in Britain, France, and the United States gave no indication of this. On the contrary, they resulted in the return of openly pro-capitalist governments. And clearly, a world socialist revolution would not be able to succeed without the participation of a majority of the workers in these countries. I mean, popular discontent was more widespread, obviously, in the defeated countries, especially in Germany, but also in some of the breakaway parts of the by-then-dissolved Austro-Hungarian Empire. In these places, there were significant minorities in favour of following the Bolsheviks' example. I mean, Lenin and the Bolsheviks looked forward to a revolution similar to theirs taking place in Germany. But even there, in elections, workers rejected that type of revolution in favour of democratic reformism. I mean, a minority did attempt an insurrection on more than one occasion, but failed each time and were brutally suppressed. So Lenin had miscalculated and found himself in charge of an economically backward country I was in no position to move over to a socialist society. At this point, he must have asked himself again, what is to be done? He seems to have decided that all he could do was to hold on to power while allowing capitalism in a controlled way and to use the most brutal methods in order to hold on to power. No, my view, I think, is that he realised that he had miscalculated about seizing power in conditions in a country which was not ripe economically for socialism, let alone politically. I think his last article showed this. He complains about the developing bureaucracy, and in some comments in January 1923 of a book on the Russian Revolution by a non-Bolshevik Russian revolutionary, Nikolai Saharov, he asks, "You say that civilization is necessary for the building of socialism. Very good. But why could we not first create such prerequisites of civilization in our country by the expulsion of the landowners and the Russian capitalists and then start moving towards socialism? Where, in what books, have you read that such variations of the customary historical sequence of events are impermissible or impossible?" Well, Lenin asked for quotes, and the answer is everywhere in the writings of Marx. After all, had Marx written, "No social order is ever destroyed before all the productive forces for which it's sufficient have been developed, and new superior relations of production never replace older ones before the material conditions for their existence have matured within the framework of the old society," and "even when a society has got upon the right track for the discovery of the natural laws of its movement, it can neither clear by bones nor remove by legal enactments the obstacles offered by the successive phases of its normal development." As I said, I mean, quoting from Marx doesn't solve anything or prove anything. But I mean, it's Lenin that asked, where did Marx say that what he did couldn't happen? In fact, in earlier articles, Marx and Engels had gone even further and discussed what would happen if the working class or a communist came to power before the material conditions for socialism were right. When Marx had written in 1847, "If, therefore, the proletariat overthrows the political rule of the bourgeoisie, its victory will only be temporary, only an element in the service of the bourgeois revolution itself, as in the year 1794, as long as, in the course of history, its movement, the material conditions have not yet been created, which make necessary the abolition of the bourgeois mode of production, and therefore also the definitive overthrow of the political rule of the bourgeoisie." In Engels discussed the fate of a communist revolutionary who had come to be in control of political power before the conditions for communism were ripe, referring to Thomas Munzer, who was the leader of a peasant revolt in the early 1500s. He wrote, "The worst thing that can befall a leader of an extreme party is to be compelled to take over the government in an epoch when the movement is not yet ripe for the domination of the class which he represents and for the realization of the measures which that domination would imply. He's compelled to represent not his party or his class, but the class for whom conditions are ripe for domination in the interests of the movement itself. He is compelled to defend the interests of an alien class and to feed his own class with phrases and promises with the assertion that the interests of that alien class are their own interests. Whoever puts himself in this awkward position is irrevocably lost." I mean, this could be seen as almost perfectly describing the situation Lenin found himself in after 1917. His government could not establish socialism and had no choice but to develop capitalism, while at the same time asserting that they were governing in the interests of the workers. Now, Marx expected if this happened, the rule of the working class would be overthrown and traditional capitalist rule restored. Although there were people that predicted this would happen in Russia, I mean, Kautsky in 1930, for example, this is not what happened. What did happen was that the part of the revolutionaries evolved into a new privileged and ruling class, which nevertheless continued to preside over the development of capitalism. So it turned out that the Russian revolutionary intelligentsia, which Lenin was one, not only assumed the role of the classical bourgeoisie in overthrowing a previous social order that was impeding future capitalist development, but it also assumed their role as the beneficiaries of this overthrow of becoming a new privileged ruling class. In this sense, the Bolshevik seizure of power in November 1917 was not a socialist revolution, nor a model for a future socialist revolution. And just as the French Revolution dominated revolutionary thought throughout the 19th century, the Russian Revolution dominated revolutionary thought in the 20th. The unfortunate result was that many of those who were against capitalism went down a road that could not have led to socialism, even though the material conditions for it to exist on a world scale were present. So to conclude, was Lenin a Russian anti-Tsarist revolutionary who succeeded, or a socialist who failed? I suggest he was probably both. Okay, that's my talk.